This is the European edition of Breaking Banks, the world's number one fintech podcast and radio show. We bring you the European unicorns, startups, founders, regulators, and leaders innovating the rapidly evolving fintech scene today. A truly localized podcast with both English and local language content with some of the world's most well-known hosts and influencers in the fintech sector globally. Join us every week as we explore what makes the European Union a phenomenal proving ground for many of the fastest growing fintech plays in the world today. Okay, let's roll.
Welcome everybody to Breaking Banks Europe, which is part of Breaking Banks, the number one fintech show in the world. Breaking Banks Europe is about Europe, for Europe, but goes beyond Europe. Today I'm here with Matthias Kroner, my co-host. Hi Matthias, how are you doing?
Ciao Paolo, I'm doing fine, thank you so much. I hope you're fine as well.
Yes, it has been kind of an hectic time, but we are pushing ahead. You know, today we have two special guests, Matthias, you know that well.
Yeah.
Because we want to talk about Europe and Singapore. First of all, let me explain our audience what Singapore is if they never visited or never got the chance to look at the statistics. Singapore has a population of almost 6 million people and a GDP per capita, which is about 50,000 euros. According to the IMD World Competitiveness Center, which is produced by the Swiss-based Institute for Management Development, Singapore ranks second among the top most competitive countries, which are in order. I give you the top five: the United States of America, Singapore, Sweden, Denmark, and Switzerland. So kind of a few European countries also. If we look at the other five, so 5 to 10, we have the Netherlands, Finland, Hong Kong, Norway, and South Korea. So very competitive landscape. And if I look at these names, I see something which is a common leitmotiv underneath for fintech, which might be open banking and payments. Now, which are the reasons why Singapore has been ranked second by the IMD World Competitiveness Center study? Well, first of all, the study looks at knowledge, technology, and future readiness. So apparently, Singapore has been ranked third for knowledge, second for technology, and 11th for future readiness. In particular, the strongest performance of Singapore was in talent, number one, technological framework, number one, and it also ranked number four in education and IT integration. So as talent was number one, I'm very pleased to have two talented guests today in our show, and I'm very happy to welcome them so that together we can jump into the future of fintech in Singapore. First of all, I'm flattered that Samantha Ghiotti accepted our invitation. Samantha is Vice CEO of Singlife, an online insurance company in Singapore. Welcome to the show.
Hey, ciao Paolo. Nice to see you and thanks for having me.
We are very excited. I know that today is a holiday in Singapore. What are you celebrating?
It's Vesak Day. I'm learning about it. Been in Singapore for 4 months, about two of which at home. Already, it feels like a little bit of a special day because I managed to spend more time than usual with my kids. So Vesak Day is an Indian holiday. Apparently, lots of home cookies are being shared. And I am so looking forward to actually seeing action maybe next year.
So today you are mixing Italian and Indian cuisine.
Exactly.
Let's go for innovation. That to have on the show, Adam Reynolds. Adam is the CEO of Saxo Bank for Asia Pacific. Welcome to Breaking Banks Europe, Adam.
Thanks, Paolo, and good to speak to you again.
Adam, are you also celebrating?
I am, but I'm in Malaysia at the moment, across the border from Singapore, so working from home as all of my colleagues at the moment, but we are also celebrating WESAC Day.
Okay, sure. So welcome here today. Now, what do we want to do today? We want to discuss and compare the different perspectives between Singapore and Europe with focus on fintech innovation, digital banking, and insurance. So I want to start, first of all, to learn a bit more about our guest. So your ambitions, the key roles that you have in this overwhelming effort of digital transformation in financial services. I will start with Samantha. Samantha, you just mentioned you started a new role at Singapore Life, which is an online insurer that embarked on a major rebranding effort at the end of last year. The name has changed into Sing Life. Now, I remember you had a different logo, and I read that you have a brand new technology-led strategy that mixes insurance and payments, which might be something unusual for many European competitors. Now, let's start from the logo. Previously, the logo featured the lion. Now, it changed into a burst logo. I read that it signifies the burst of energy that technology brings to help our customers overcome the inertia of unlocking the potential of their money. What about that?
You obviously done your research. Yes, that's exactly right. So Sing Life started about 4 years ago as an online insurer and with a head. So the logo was a lion head, sort of quintessential Singaporean logo, color was red. It actually served us well at the start of the journey as the business really grew through selling insurance products through sort of the high net worth channel. And as the business evolved and grew over, particularly over the last 2 years, the brand was functional to us repositioning the business into two distinct areas. One is a consumer business and the other is the intermediary business. And sort of moving from sort of a lion head to a burst of energy was essential to that journey and to that transformation. Unlocking the potential of money for everyone is the strap line through which we go to market. And it signifies the ambition of bringing products to customers in a simplified, intuitive way, particularly and importantly at the intersection of insurance, banking, and investments.
So how do money, payment, and insurance intersect?
Well, in a normal, I guess, in a traditional sense, you would have, you know, banks, you would have investment firms, and you would have insurance companies. And what we're trying to do is to sort of blur the boundaries where appropriate so that customers can really see the benefits of both managing, saving, investing, and growing their assets through their life. So it is actually a journey that takes customer through understanding their needs and their, particularly as their life cycle evolves, and then helping them through a number of sort of product and propositions that sort of fit those needs, whether they are, as you mentioned before, a card and a payment transaction, whether they are a saving product, whether then they evolve into an investment proposition and, you know, asset accumulation, as well as sort of protecting their assets through insurance products and over time also through their asset accumulation phase, which is really around retiring. It's brought together in simplified terms.
So the industry may be divided in silos for whatever reasons, but the client is always one. So if you really want to follow their life cycle, you need to become holistic and start blurring the lines between the different dimensions.
I do think that that's happening already. So
yeah, that's good. I mean, it is happening a bit of the time, right? In some areas, there's an acceleration compared to others. Regulation is not always aligned with the story, but I think that this is a key trend. Adam, you are the CEO of Saxo Bank in Asia Pacific. So you take a look at Singapore and all the countries in the area. There may be a difference between Saxo Bank operating in Europe and in Asia. I presume that there is a different digital readiness in your clients and in the broader community, but I want to get your point of view about this because you have hands-on experience.
Yeah, Paolo. I mean, it's a very good question. And in fact, the differences are not as much as you would think. And most of the differences are really driven by regulation. So Saxo's Bank's two biggest offices are Denmark and Singapore. Singapore was the first overseas office that was opened about 14 years ago. And we are very similar. Actually, the two businesses that we have in Denmark and Singapore are very similar. They have the full range of Saxo Bank's products. The platform is exactly the same. The user journeys are the same. And we try and get the economies of scale of having very, very similar businesses across the different entities. It's where there are different rules around some of our product sets, for instance, CFDs or options or some of the more trading products that we have to cut back on what we're doing. But in effect, the platform that we have and the UI that we have for clients to invest and trade in is exactly the same no matter which country you're in. And it's really only the regulation that changes what we can and can't do.
Fair enough. So you mentioned the regulation. Now, Matthias, counterintuitively, regulation can be a catalyst for innovation, I can say. This is the case of Europe with the PSD2, but we are here comparing the PSD2 with the powerhouse of the Monetary Authority of Singapore. Now, you started your fantastic journey in payments. Just to remind everybody, what is the PSD2? And then we try to figure out what the Monetary Authority of Singapore is instead of doing in Hong Kong. What would you say about the PSD2?
Yeah, well, PSD2 as Payment Service Directives, I think, was started with great enthusiasm some years ago, part of open banking, allowing everybody to access banking-related data, transactional data, with the objective to create a better and greater service for the consumers. And I can tell you that actually the PSD2 development was followed very closely in other regulatory regions, in particular by MIS in Singapore. Whenever I had the chance to be in Singapore, having a lot of conversations regarding PSD2, how that thing is doing, how market participants are following it up, is there kind of an advantage for the consumers coming up and so on. So PSD2 really, from Europe to Singapore and others, of course, turned out to be something like a role model for the planet in breaking up data silos and making it more accessible. Many regions, as well as Singapore, did kind of take that initiative and picked it up and developed it further. I have the feeling, but I'm happy to hear from Adam and Sam, actually, how their perspective on that is. But it gives us a first indication, maybe also, of different roles of regulators. And that might be the second question to our guests, actually, is I've always had the feeling that MIS is a more like market creating regulator, a standard setting regulator, and something like an educating regulator, if I may say so, while the European regulators, and of course I'm very much focused on the Germans, are following the market and try to secure that the market is operating in a very compliant way. How is your experience on that?
Sure. So look, I think it's a really good observation that Singapore, the MAS as a regulator, does like to lead the market. But I think that's more Singapore Inc. as a country and as a government. Mm. And as a country which doesn't have a lot of natural resources, they've always had to create industries and be innovative about attracting industries to come to Singapore, which is why there's such a focus on education and talent. If you go back to the sort of 1960s, 1970s, that was focused on electronics business, building an electronics business, and more that has become, you know, a world leader in high-end electronics. Then sort of 1990s into the 2000s, that was around biotech, and we've become a very, very strong biotech producer. And the fintech really sort of started taking off sort of the last 5 years when the government's got very focused on being a leader there and developing tools for fintechs to start up in Singapore. And the first was obviously the sandbox that MAS introduced, and the Singapore Fintech Festival, which brings 50, 60, 70,000 people each year here. But it's really creating an ecosystem so that people can develop new ideas in a market that's well-regulated and wealthy.
So it's like, Adam, there is a synchronization of engagements and activities that the Monetary Authority of Singapore is basically orchestrating, fostering the collaboration among a variety of actors. If anybody of our audience ever been to the Singapore FinTech Festival, they would realize that they got more than 50,000 participants last year. So it's a massive event, but there's a lot of debate, a lot of value into that event. So it's not just a show. So I may say that if I can compare, the European regulators are very prescriptive in the way they operate, like they identify the do's and the don'ts. Yes, the PSD2 was there to foster the competitiveness of the Capital Market Union and the Banking Charter. But the Monetary Authority of Singapore made a further step ahead because effectively they entered, as Matthias said, into the marketplace, becoming very proactive and participative. So, Samantha, you said you just joined SingLife in Singapore. Have you already had a sense and a feel about these different regulatory perspectives between the Western world and what happens in Singapore?
A bit, I guess, is the answer. I was just reflecting on the taxonomy that you, Matthias, have sort of put forward. And I think the experience of Sing Life is, if not unique, is particular because it is a fintech. In fact, it's an insurtech to be specific, but it's also regulated as a life insurer. And so because it's one of the very few businesses in Singapore that actually is a full stack from, you know, the regulatory license through the tech, the channels and the consumer. And there's, in fact, the vast majority of the fintechs are actually balance sheet-like businesses that are unregulated. I feel that Singlife is a little bit of a sort of crossroads or intersection with the regulator. On one side, I have certainly observed some very positive and business enhancing, one would call it market creator, I guess, circumstances in which the regulator has been extraordinarily forward-looking, supportive, particularly as COVID hit the fintech community. And so this is manifested in things like, you know, support for employment, support for working from home, and so a whole bunch of sort of supporting activities, which I actually did not expect any regulator to be really worried about these things. But here, the MIS, they are. That, I think, was surprising. On the other hand, as a license insurance, I'm also seeing the other aspect where, you know, the regulator is worried about, you know, our CAR position, our regulatory requirements, a whole bunch of sort of quite stringent reporting requirements, particularly for new products. And so I'm actually witnessing both sides of the, I guess, regulatory relationship.
Okay, so effectively, the speed of action is also important here because times change very fast and the COVID is an unfortunate example of that. So you need to make sure you protect all of the investments into education, talent, which are long-term and can be affected short-term severely by the current crisis. One of the things that happens in Singapore is the creation of effective platforms with open banking perspectives in order to aggregate the work of incumbents and the ideas of the fintech. To make sure that our audience, we have a very broad international audience, a lot of people are listening to us in Europe, they might not be aware about the AFIN and the Apex initiative. So the AFIN is the Asian Financial Innovation Network that was established as a nonprofit organization in 2018, if I'm not mistaken, by the Asian Bankers Association, the International Finance Corporation, which is part of the World Bank Group, and of course, the Monetary Authority of Singapore. Now, what does AFIN do is to set up a facilitation of collaboration between financial institutions and fintech in Singapore, Asia, and beyond. Now, to support this mission, they launched the API exchange that's called APIX. There is a cross-border open architecture, API marketplace, and sandbox platform for collaboration between fintech and financial institution. Matthias, do we see anything of this kind in Europe?
No.
That's a very short answer. Should we?
I'm so sad about it. And the answer on the question, should we, is clearly yes. I had the privilege to be very near to this AFIN Foundation years ago as FIDOR was part of the founding partners. For whatever reason, during my FIDOR time, we had a lot of interaction with Singapore, and AFIN definitely was one, simply because we believe in open marketplaces, or we believed in open marketplaces and the integration of the stakeholders, creating an ecosystem and supporting young fintech companies to deliver and deploy their solutions a compliant way so that the incumbents do not have to be afraid touching those kind of new things, right, which might be out of a regulatory view or out of a risk management view, quite hot, so to say, and you do not know how to handle it. So it was pretty clear that it needs something like this neutral government body in as the trusted man in the middle for this ecosystem. So on the one side, for the fintechs and any kind of tech provider, by the way, which and who wants to provide their solutions sandboxed, and then have also then on the other side, so supplied and the demand side, which might be a more like incumbent type of bank that can test sandbox the solution on
their stack so that both ends to this potential transaction, matchmaking transaction, have a good trust and a good feeling around it. And AFIN acts there as a quality insurance, I would say, in particular looking that the partners are compliant so that nobody has to be afraid of such a partnership. Now, during the last FinTech Festival, actually, AFIN presented that with the provided or with a selection of the provided solutions on AFIN, on Apex, actually, they did build up a bank within 10 days. And that is massive, right? And I shared this learning, actually, some weeks later in Europe, let me say it like this. I don't want to be too specific. And talked to a representative of a regulator saying that something like that has happened and that I strongly would invite them to look at it. And maybe we can cross kind of border that to Europe and make it a global effort and so on and so forth, which was received very positively. However, nothing happened. However, the first answer when I said, listen, and they made it that with the components being offered on Apex, actually, they did set up a bank in 9 days. Then the first answer was, oh my goodness, then we're going to get more of those silly, useless bank license applications. Because tech is seen to be a burden, right? So tech is seen to be a burden and something like hindering you to get into this industry, ring-fencing it somehow. And let me say it like I wouldn't share that view. So I think, yes, that AFIN Apex thing is great. And Peter and the team are doing a good job there. No, I don't know. Sam, Adam, do you see something like that in Europe?
Yes, no. Matthias, before we get to Sam and Adam, we need to call for a little break, like a few seconds, because we want to give voice also to some of our friends and our sponsors. You just said that Rome was built in a day, a bank can be built in 10 days.
Yeah.
So let's have a little break, stay on the line, and we get back in a few seconds with Sam and Adam telling us what they can build in 10 days, okay?
Do you want to be part of Breaking Banks Europe? Reach out and learn more about the opportunity to be featured in one of our shows. With over 1.6 million listeners and counting, Breaking Banks Europe is bound to become the place to advance critical dialogue in Europe and the UK fintech scene. Reach out on Instagram or Twitter at Breaking Banks EU or go to www.provoke.fm.
Thanks, everybody, for being again with us after this break of Breaking Banks Europe. We just said before the break that Rome was not built in a day, but a bank can be built in 10 days in Singapore. And now we discussed the open banking platform and how technology can be an enabling element instead of a burden. And I want to hear from Samantha what she thinks about that, because she's making more and more experiences into the payment framework, gets benefit from open banking mindsets. So what is the role of open banking for you, and what is the value that it can give to companies like Singlife or other type of innovative players?
First of all, the concept of open banking is fairly recent here in Singapore or Southeast Asia, but it's been in Europe for a number of years. And I actually do think that certainly in Europe has yet to deliver the promises to the consumer that was originally designed for, which was really the ability of delivering value to consumer in near real time, and also to be able to break the boundaries of proprietary data that exists in silos within, financial institutions. I think that it might be true that Rome is built in a day, and it's also true that we can build a bank in 10 days, perhaps at some point even in less. But in my opinion, it's not really just about what the technology does or how fast it can be built. And prior to joining Singlife, I spent about a decade at Anthemis as an investor, particularly in early stage sort of fintechs and insurtech companies. And we always really looked at the technology as a necessary, it's an important layer, but very often not being the differentiator. And so that is certainly a lesson that I brought with me at Singlife. Whilst we need to build a solid, robust, scalable stack from a tech perspective, I think it's really about how you then package that to deliver services and propositions to the end user. And that, I think, this does take, frankly, longer than 5 days. That's certainly my experience. And when you wrap that on actually a license, whether it's a banking license or insurance license or money transfer license, whenever you get a regulatory component added to your stack, that really changes the dynamics in terms of timing, certainly in terms of risk.
So I don't know if you already have your opinion, Sam, but 4 or 5 years ago, I remember at Cybels, incumbents were discussing the upcoming PSD2 like a regulatory burden. Okay. Oh my God, another regulation. Now, already last year, the sentiment was completely different. Incumbents thought there was an opportunity for them to compete, which also means collaborate with other companies. So do you feel the incumbents in Singapore have a different approach compared to those in broader Europe?
Yes, definitely.
Here, I find the incumbents in Singapore sometimes to be also very incumbent, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Is that I think incumbents here have zero incentive to collaborate because it's such a concentrated market. And, you know, whether you know it's a big bank or a big insurer, there's very little incentive to do anything different. And I have yet to see how, you know, turkeys will vote for Christmas anywhere in the world. But if there is one place where turkeys really, really, really aren't going to vote for Christmas, is in Singapore.
Okay, so Adam, what is your point of view here? You work with many institutions, you work with many innovators. Maybe there's a way out, a third way, like partnerships that fintech can create among themselves or different companies outside the banking arena. So
Paolo, I think it's a great question. And for us, yeah, we are very, very strong on partnerships, developing partnerships and letting other people use our stack to access the market. So we developed an open banking portal of our own, which we launched globally from Singapore in 2015. And you know, we've got an SDK and people have 250 APIs they can access to build their own business on top of our execution, custody, and so on. So if you look at people like Stashaway, Auto Wealth, even some of the big banks like OCBC Bank, they've all got their robo-advisors. All of that actually comes through Saxo to access the markets through our open portal. And we want to continue to develop those sorts of collaborations in the market. You know, it's our belief that we have no monopoly on a view on user experience or user journey, and lots of different people have innovative ideas that they want to test, but they don't necessarily want to go through the whole infrastructure setup that requires. And so we want to be there for that. And that's very much the case with the upcoming digital banks, which I think is going to be a huge opportunity for us in Singapore to help develop propositions that challenge the very, very incumbents.
Yeah, so you talked about the digital banks. Let's explain to our audience what is happening in Singapore. In June 2019, the Monetary Authority of Singapore announced they were ready to issue up to 2 digital full banks and up to 3 digital wholesale banking licenses. Now, these new banks would operate in addition to any digital bank that the incumbent would have decided to establish under the regulatory framework of the Monetary Authority of Singapore. Now, they received 21 applications, if I'm not mistaken, more or less, of which Ant Financial and many consortiums. Now, the process of reviewing these applications is a bit slowed these days because of COVID, so might revive anytime soon. I don't know if you guys have more up-to-date information compared to mine. So, Matthias, it seems that notwithstanding the incumbents are incumbents, the Monetary Authority of Singapore is trying to put new players at the gates of these incumbents.
Yeah, well, yes and no. And it's definitely not the first time that a regulator is really looking for more competition, believing in the fact that competition will improve the service for the people. I think this is something which is really written on the flag of the MIS saying, okay, guys, you need to be more customer friendly. You need to be more customer centric. I give you another example. For instance, that the MIS did send out a mail to the banks that, for instance, the UX when opening up an account is not good, and it shall be not more than 3 clicks to open up an account, and so on and so forth. Just imagine, I've never heard a European or any other regulator actually giving UX not only recommendations, but orders actually to the bank saying, just imagine you would send Deutsche Bank a mail saying your account opening should be, you know, 20 clicks less, you know, so.
Maybe you need the UX to be recommended.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe the CEO wouldn't answer what is a click, and I don't know, we do it online. But joking, of course, joking. No need to sue me on that. But it's really, yes, of course, it's competition. It's increasing competition. However, on the one side, we have to have a close look to the requirements that those banks have to bring, actually. And I would say they're pretty stiff, you know. So if you, for instance, go for a full banking license, you have to show up with 1.5 billion Singapore dollars after 5 years. That's massive, right? So you need to have business for 1.5 billion Sing dollars equity. You need to have the business for that. And then you have three of those banks there and some others. So, you know, we will see.
Consortium, so that's why there would be few consortium applying for that.
Yeah, I guess so, because it definitely will. It's a challenge, right?
I have yet to see a startup anywhere in the world, and I include the Valley here, that just on day one shows up with $1 billion just for capital requirements, right? I mean, like, this is like,
yeah.
How you support the sort of startup community. So it might be, so, and I think it goes to the heart of how, more from a, I guess, perhaps political beliefs perspective, the sort of Singapore Inc. and therefore the regulator here thinks about competition. It would be a non-starter as a requirement anywhere in Europe or in North America, right? People would be just laughing at it. But here, no, here it's different, right? And that sort of obviously provides some very specific constraints as to who is capable of even applying for this, which is why, in my opinion, that's one of the reasons why you get consortium. And it's consortium of big people anyway, right?
To be fair with the process, it's 1.5 billion after 5 years. So you definitely do not have to have the 1.5 in the beginning, but you need to have, however, a significant amount of equity already in the start. So anyhow, but Sam, that doesn't change the message, right? So you're absolutely right. However, on the one side saying that, on the other side, I can imagine why people are very, let me say, keen to get it, because it's only a limited amount of licensees, and the scarcity itself might be value driving. So I wouldn't underestimate that. And we speak about definitely the most, I would say, compliant, stable, and reputative location you can have in Southeast Asia.
On the other side, yes, I always think that a bank is, first of all, security. It has to be. Then a bank is risk management by definition. And then it's about clients, and not because I don't like clients, but ultimately there's a special role in society, right? So capital is also very important. So a good compromise between innovation and sanity is always, to me, fairly welcome. Adam, I don't know what is your point of view about this.
I think that the 1.5 billion is super high as well to achieve over 5 years. But I think the fact that there's only two of the banks that have to get to that 1.5 billion, and that's the two full banks. And restricting it to two full banks makes a lot of sense, because those banks can develop a business model. They can get themselves known and in the community and growing accounts. And then from Singapore, I think that all of them are looking to move out of Singapore within the Southeast Asian region to develop those banks further. So I think Singapore is a great place to be building that from. And I think the scarcity value, as Matthias just mentioned, is important to maintaining the value. And the high capital is important to maintaining the willingness of people to invest for the safety reason. So I quite like the balance between high capital and limited licenses. I think that's going to work quite well. We're involved in one of the consortium's bidding, not as an investor, but as a partner for a full bank license. And yeah, we're hopeful that they'll be one of the winners and that we'll be part of that journey.
So if I can ask you, Europe and Singapore, what has Europe inspired or can inspire Singapore in the world for, and what Singapore can inspire, and then vice versa, what they should change? what would you recommend them?
I think one of the most important things that we see in Europe and Singapore, or particularly in Denmark and Singapore, which is important to all sort of digital finance, is the ability to onboard clients very, very quickly with a good user experience and being 100% sure of who they are. And Denmark has NemID and Singapore has SingPass, which are government-guaranteed schemes where you can get the identity in Singapore from the MAS, in Denmark from the government there, and you can onboard a client in 3 minutes, right, with guaranteed identity. I think that's a super important part to be able to do any sort of digital process where you don't have to have huge teams for onboarding and you get the economies of scale for bringing in the new clients.
So that's the platform or the foundational layer, Adam, that's what you're saying.
I think it's a very important foundational layer, and I think it's something that I'm not sure how many other countries in Europe have that same sort of setup, but for us, you know, the fact that Denmark and Singapore have it is driving our growth in those two regions much stronger than a lot of the other countries.
And by the way, we saw that the Nordics, together with Singapore, are in the top 10 of the competitiveness countries in the world, right? So definitely that's inspiring the fintech too. Sam, what would you say?
I was just reflecting on sort of lessons that we've learned in Europe, France, Germany, and UK in particular, around having consortiums. And it struck me that most of the banking sort of licenses here are possibly going to be issued to consortium, probably with the exception of sort of Ant Financial. My experience suggests that actually the biggest challenge when you put two large institutions together is really around getting that the cultural component to work. So just like maybe for those that perhaps can remember this, but RBS really tried very hard to create a partnership with Tesco, Deutsche Bank. I wonder whether the challenges here are not around technology or partnerships or regulation or customer experience. It's just getting a bank to actually understand how a telco works and vice versa, and getting them to actually be able to do business together.
Well, ultimately, it's about the business model, because technology has its prowess, also sometimes its limitation because not always matured, but the mindset is very important. And the mindset is about culture, but also incentives. So when the ecosystem facilitates the creation of different incentives, it fosters the possibility of culture, most likely, to grow and to succeed. Otherwise, it's always difficult to be a donkey shot, right? So fighting against everybody else. Talking about fight, is COVID-19 time everywhere in the world? Some places is harder than others, unfortunately. And now we are all in Singapore. I guess that you're still locked down in the economy. So Singapore made a very interesting initiative, was mentioned in the first half of this show. So immediately the Monetary Authority of Singapore started asking itself what is going on to the ecosystem and to the fintech scene, because that's also considered like a competitive advantage of Singapore on the world stage. So in Singapore, for Singapore, I think there was a 150 million support program, especially dedicated to the fintech and the startup. Matthias, I don't know whether you have more information about that. We haven't seen such a clear cut, if you like, support for the fintech scene anywhere else.
You're perfectly right, Paolo. Actually, part of the communication happened when I had the pleasure and honor to be guest on an MAS-initiated podcast, which was called Founders in Resilience, something like, I think in the meantime, 3 weeks ago. I lose totally my time feeling in this COVID. It's all the same. It's a very fluffy period. And Subnando Mohanty, the head of FinTech, actually was part of that show, and Sub did then communicate that program. And yes, you're right. I wouldn't know anything comparable. It is a clearly dedicated 150 million program ignited by the MAS in the state of Singapore for FinTech companies. And perfectly in line with everything that happens there in Singapore. It's because I think the state of Singapore and MAS did realize that actually FinTech is so relevant for them. Why? Because banking and financial services is so relevant to them. And years ago, they identified the need to embrace that digitalization tendencies those days and now mainstream today. Why? Because as much as I recall those days' discussions, they found out that maybe 10, 15, whatever, 20% of the jobs in banking might be endangered with an increase in digitalization. And their reaction was not to say, listen, okay, then we need to forbid it, like that would have maybe some other state or regulator reacted like that. No, they said, no, we need to embrace it. And so let us be the spearhead of that development. And let us educate the people actually towards that digitalization so that we have kind of the seeds for the future there. That is why, for instance, we on the feeder side did cooperate them with the Polytech High School, setting up sandboxes for the students and all that stuff, which was a great job, right? I really loved that being there. And which is now in line with the 150 million program, right? And this clear dedication and commitment to this fintech environment is something that is clearly speaking for Singapore.
Well, Matthias, I would say that the problem of the banking charter was born inside the banks. So digitization might not be the cause of a loss of 20% of the workforce, but the opportunity to create a new workforce, because without doing anything, that loss will be there anyway.
That's exactly. So then it was...
It is clearly an ecosystem problem.
Yeah, then it was more like my bad English. Now, I really meant to say it's that it's a kind of outside... Yes, it's a development in itself, but if the incumbents do not kind of recreate themselves in a proper way, it needs to have a bit more motivation outside.
So... I want to ask our guest for the last word before we wrap up the show. They gave us this amazing opportunity to join the Equator line and to talk about Singapore. We get back to Europe. Sam, what do you expect for the future, the post-COVID future, whatever?
Who knows? I really don't. I mean, the short-term implications of going back to the office, I think, people may, predict, understand what this looks like. And I think every organization and like that ourselves making plan for that. The long-term implications are far less obvious, right? And so certainly I think it seems like it's opening up a better market opportunity for digitally native businesses. And so I'm happy to be part of that cohort of businesses that play natively in that space. And I do think that Singapore, I would concur with what Mattia was saying. I think that Singapore has proven to be very supportive in material ways during this period for the fintech community here in Singapore.
Adam, what about you?
Yeah, look, I think that the COVID is really accelerating the move towards digital. The old bricks and mortar branch is, been a comfort for many people who are of ages more like mine and perhaps older. But I think that they have to get used to digital banking now as well. So I think it'll, for the digital, for the millennials, of course, it's no issue. But when you start talking about the people who have the wealth, who are in their 50s, 60s and 70s and have had to embrace digitization because of COVID, I think that will accelerate the process of digitization. For us at Saxo, our year so far in Singapore is triple to quadruple the number of new clients we had this time last year. The only limitation on the number of clients we can have actually is the number of people we can have helping to process those that don't go STP through our system. But it has been an amazing lift to our business, and I suspect that with that will help digital native businesses like Sing Life and Saxo to really grow a market share.
So thanks, Adam. I want to thank all of our audience around the world, the Breaking Banks broadcast around the world. I'm here with Matthias Kroners. We had Sam Ghiotti. We had Adam Reynolds. Now, Matthias, I am in Frankfurt right now, and you're German. There is a saying in Germany that is... allow my accent, kind beer for fear. Now, as we all do home office, I think we can enjoy beers anytime during the day.
Yeah.
Broken. So I hope you can enjoy a beer today listening to the show of Breaking Banks Europe. And don't forget to follow us on your preferred platform. Thanks for being with us. That's a wrap.
Thanks for listening to Breaking Banks Europe, a Provoke Media podcast in cooperation with FinTech Stage. Don't forget to tweet us out, shout out, or post to the team at Breaking Banks EU on Twitter. If there's something or someone you'd like to hear on our cast, let us know. See you next week on Breaking Banks Europe.